This is KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. I'm Kathleen Shannon. Since the onset of COVID-19, I've been grappling with the idea of hope. In some ways, it feels crass to be thinking about hope in the midst of disaster. And still, I can't help feeling there's a place for hope here. As I chewed on this idea, I started wondering, what does hope really mean? It's a word we use all the time. I hope it's sunny tomorrow. I hope there's ice cream in the freezer. But what does it mean in a greater sense? What does hope look like during a pandemic? I spoke with some community members who think about hope often to hear their takes. Stick around for those voices coming up this half hour. But first, here's some words from writer and historian Rebecca Solnit in a 2016 interview with theologian Krista Tippett for the podcast On Being.
One of the things I'm really interested in is, what are the stories we tell and what are their consequences? And are there other ways of telling, other stories that don't get told?
Yes, yes.
And hopefulness is really, for me, is not optimism, that everything's going to be fine and we can just sit back. And that's too much like pessimism, which is that everything's going to suck and we can just sit back. Hope for me just means a Buddhist sense of uncertainty, of coming to terms with the fact that we don't know what will happen and that there's maybe room for us to intervene and that we have to let go of the certainty people seem to love more than hope, and know that we don't know what's going to happen. And we live in a very surprising world where nobody anticipated the way the Berlin Wall would fall, right, or the Arab Spring would rise up, the impact of Occupy Wall Street. Do you know, Obama was unelectable 6 months before he was elected.
But I wonder, as you just described that just then, I mean, what you said, you know, in those moments of disaster, of crisis, we come face to face with the reality that unexpected things will happen. As you said, that life is surprising in good ways and bad. That's just true. But is there something life-giving, even energizing, about people actually having to face those bedrock realities in those moments?
Yeah. And there's a way a disaster throws people into the present and sort of gives them this supersaturated immediacy,
yeah,
that also includes a deep sense of connection. It's as though in some violent gift you've been given a kind of spiritual awakening where you're close to mortality in a way that makes you feel more alive. You're deeply in the present and can let go of past and future and your personal narrative in some ways. You have shared an experience with everyone around you, and you often find very direct but also metaphysical senses of connection to the people you suddenly have something in common with.
And now we hear from Lisa Goddard, founder of Roaring Fork Insight, based in Carbondale.
In the practices of insight meditation, and any really in any Buddhist meditation practice, hope is not really stressed. In fact, one of my most influential teachers, he's a Zen teacher named Norman Fisher, and he teaches on the practices of Lojong, Tibetan mind training. And one of the training instructions is to abandon hope. So we think of hope as this good thing, you know.
Right.
It's certainly more preferable than hopelessness. But if we hope things will improve and we measure our progress and it doesn't match our hopes and our projections, then what happens is that hope, it becomes discouraging. The teachings in this domain around hope, it really actually starts with accepting reality. So once we're able to see life and our role in creating it, it's the opposite of resignation and defeat or wishing it to be different. We're seeing that, like, this is a storm that we have to pass through right now. And we can't make a difference if we're denying what exists. So acceptance of reality is the place where we can start to make change happen. You know, it's so extraordinary when I think of our capacity for goodness. Like all of those healthcare professionals that show up every day, exposing themselves every day to this virus. in a way, they are showing us what we're capable of being. Like, if we can link ourselves to those people of compassion, then the question is, what can we do to change the situation? And really, we can just start with where we are in our little town and do what we can where we are. Mm-hmm. And so, in part, if we're alone and we're sheltering in place by ourselves, we can start looking at all the ways in which we push people away. That's the invitation. So it's an extraordinary time, and there is distress for sure, but it's also an opportunity. You know, our economy, just like that, fell apart.
Yeah.
Like, fell apart. So to see how much we've trusted this fragile structure, my hope, if I am going to use that word, is let's all start learning how to grow our food locally. Mm-hmm. Let's start to take care of ourselves in our communities, looking at what we want to put effort into.
Absolutely.
You know, our work here is to grow and learn and how to be a human being. You don't have to have hope to do that. You just have to keep going and keep looking and keep learning and seeing, how can I help? Asking that question, how can I help? I think of what's happening as a real opportunity to bring our community together in a way in which is sort of stepping away from business as usual. Mm-hmm. Like, we have this great opportunity. And in doing that, we have to be able to have some intention. So in the practices, everything rests on our intention. So to ask, what is my intention? And then to put effort towards that intention, and to know it's important that I pursue this goal with all the effort and the dedication that I can muster. I want to be able to do my best, but I don't want to be fixated on my preconceived notion of the result. So I'm going to plant this seed, and I expect beets to come out of the ground. Mm-hmm. Our effort may lead to an unexpected outcome. It might be better than the original intent. It could be worse, mm-hmm. but we put the effort out regardless of the outcome. If we're focused on the outcome, then we've forgotten the intention.
This is Carol Grace, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Carbondale. When we take a breath, like now, if you just kind of slow and take a breath and realize that this is the same breathing that occurred when we were born. You know, we took a breath, and that breath has carried us through in our individual life experience, whatever stressors have been there, right? That our breath has been there through all of that. Our heart beating has been there, our breath, and all these life forces that all of us humans have, and all sentient beings, that we do share that. And it's just so beautiful to me to connect with breath, that we're all right now, as we're speaking, and we're all breathing the air, this air that is cleaner, actually cleaner right now, and that our hearts are beating, and we share this heartbeat that we actually can just experience together, and creates this wonderful resonance. I think it's important to actually embody the energy that we want to experience. So it's like the energy of hope. You know, what does that mean? We know that it's very different than the energy of hopelessness or confusion or unrest or anxiety, right? I mean, you can feel that in your body if you slow down, and we know what those sort of negative feelings feel like in our body. Well, what does hope feel like? You know, what does that, in the moment, the energy that we want to experience feel like? Where are the alive places? And so the immediate awareness of that, again, is in the breath and the heart. And so we can really celebrate this gift of life and embody that, feel that. And then as we kind of go forward to, now anxiety kind of lives in the future, right? I mean, we, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, what might happen, right? If all these scenarios, you know, we don't know that. Again, there's this uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, humans, we survive through uncertainty. I mean, that there is just, you know, constant change in the universe. So we have adapted to that. And so it's not necessarily a bad thing unless we, you know, there's just what is reality and then what we tell ourselves about it, mm-hmm. the stories that we tell. There's something about control. You know, we don't have control. And so I think what you're saying is really important. It's like, well, what do I have control of right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it can be something like making a meal or planting some seeds in the garden or whatever it is, it's just simple acts. It's like if we slow down and take a breath and if we're feeling hopeless because or upset because of job loss, because if we ourselves or we know anyone who's sick, and oh my gosh, you know, what happens with that? I was kind of this displaced optimism until I got a reality check from someone working at the hospital, say, and what they were seeing that I really wasn't aware of. It's a little hard to know the reality here, much less everywhere else. There are a lot of conflicting views of that. But I think it's important to get what news we need to be able to take the action or precautions that we need to take, and really not anymore.
My name is Eden Shante, and I live in Carbondale. Deva, my wife, and I own and operate True Nature Healing Arts. You know, hope to me is like a lifeline. You know, there's people who struggle with addiction, with depression, with anxiety on a daily basis, even if there wasn't the whole COVID crisis. The COVID crisis is just creating a quickening and a greater power to, you know, what we normally experience. For me, hope is like the light at the end of the tunnel, or that lifeline when you're in rocky seas or in a well and somebody throws a lifeline down to you so that you can kind of pull yourself out of the rubble, so to speak. And so that can come in a lot of different ways. And from what I've learned through yoga philosophy is that understanding and wisdom and knowledge are these things that can really create greater understanding. You know, one of the pieces of knowledge, it's this whole idea of living in the twilight of ignorance and knowledge and not perceiving things maybe in the clearest way that we can, and how fear and our emotions can cloud that ability to see experiences as they are and be able to respond in the best way. And so our practices that we employ in life, whether it's journaling or meditation or connecting in nature, can really help. Exercise, which bleeds off excess energy. But one of the things that I'm speaking to is understanding. And, you know, one very, very large piece of understanding that I feel really helps me personally in this time of crisis is simply understanding that the way nature works is that there's creation, maintenance, and deconstruction. And then the deconstruction then leads to the opportunity for new growth. And this happens in forests with forest fires that allow seeds to germinate and be able to grow new trees in the future and things of that nature. And so, you know, I'm really looking at this like there's a power to this time. There's a quickening to this time. There's this forcing us to potentially go within and explore how am I really in alignment with what my purpose is in life? How am I in alignment or not with my family, with my community, with nature? And so when times are flowing and we're having fun and we're experiencing pleasure, we're not necessarily learning. Those aren't necessarily growth moments. So, you know, for most of the people who maybe aren't in the trenches with this, as you were saying, but are certainly very concerned and watching it more from a distance as we shelter in place. But how can we use this time of going within to really learn from the friction of this experience and learn from the friction of a natural process of deconstruction that happens? You know, stars are born, stars live for a time, and then they deconstruct.
I'm Rabbi Emily Spiegel, and I'm the rabbi of the Aspen Jewish Congregation, and we serve the entire Roaring Fork Valley. You know, it's interesting. Fear is something that's so personal, and the same goes for grief. But what we're experiencing now in this period of time is both personal individual fear as well as communal fear, and the same for grief, personal grief of things that are lost, whether that's grief or loss of loved ones that certainly some people in our valley are experiencing, or grief over loss of a way of life for how long, we don't know. And it could be impacted for a very long time if we consider the economy. But fear is a different thing to sit with when you're alone in your home, when you don't have the community resources of time in person, of the ability to embrace and be embraced. Sitting with fear can be a really different and much more difficult experience in a time like this when we are physically separate from each other. Mm-hmm. But I think that in the face of this fear that so many of us are contending with about the virus, about our way of life, about what the next month or year or 2 years will hold, what we have are most of the ways, maybe not as much physical embrace, but most of the ways that we've always had to comfort ourselves and comfort one another in relationship and in community. You know, I think that I've heard the same from certain people that how can we even talk about hope when things are so bleak? Mm-hmm. And I want to lift that up and, you know, I hear that. I really, really hear that. And it's one thing for me in my comfortable home with my family and thank God with my health to think about hope. And it's a very different thing for someone who is contending with a virus, who has lost a loved one to the virus, who is on the front lines, or who is worried about paying their rent. Mm-hmm. Can they get to next week, right? Mm-hmm. So I certainly want to lift that up. But from my perspective, there's a big difference between saying all of this is the silver lining and this is supposed to show us whatever positive lesson you want to get to, and choosing to find meaning in this time. I'm not someone who believes that every single thing happens for a reason or is ordained, or that everything is inherently for the good, no matter how bleak or bad it is. But what I strongly believe is that we can find meaning in anything that happens, whether that's a positive thing or an incredibly difficult thing, or even something tragic. We can choose to create meaning. And that is what I see people doing, creating meaning of important time spent with family if you're quarantined with them, meaning of reaching out and helping other people, finding meaning in that, choosing to find meaning in people who are helping you.
And I think those are also the things that bring me hope. From my perspective, hope isn't something circumstantial, but hope is the belief that even when things are bad, they will not always be that bad. Hope is whether things are good, whether things are bad. Hope is the belief that things can, and God willing, someday will be better. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are a lot of things that can bring us hope in this time. Even looking back at different times when the world has contended with pandemics and come through them, we are resilient as individuals, as communities, as humanity. We are resilient and we have come through so many things. So that historical perspective can bring us hope that pandemics have come, we have endured them, and we've come out on the other side.
This is Reverend Lori Buschbaum. I am the interim minister at Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Carbondale. The short-term hope that I see, you know, it has to do with most everyday Americans have risen up with just this upswelling of kindness and compassion and willing to sacrifice for the common good. You know, I went for a walk in my neighborhood and I saw front doors and windows decorated with hearts and messages of encouragement. Mm-hmm. I saw homemade signs of gratitude supporting those who are frontline workers. I even saw a parade of first graders in their cars with their families, and they were slowly driving by the elementary school to surprise their teacher for her birthday. And I just thought, what an incredibly beautiful image. So, you know, all over the country, thousands of people are making cloth masks for healthcare workers. People with 3D printers are making protective gear at home to give to others. I know that the marble distillery in Carbondale retooled its production so that it could make hand sanitizer available. Mm-hmm. So I look at all those things and I see examples of short-term hope. When I think about long-term hope, I think about structural changes. We've all just witnessed millions and millions of Americans coming together and sacrificing for the common good so that we can protect our own health, the health of our children, our families, our neighbors, and millions of people we will never meet. So I think we have shown what we are capable of, that I think we can believe in the power of ordinary people to make a change that really benefits everyone. So what might some of those structural changes be? For me, the number one is probably for-profit healthcare. The LA Times quoted that in 2019, 500,000 Americans went bankrupt from medical costs. Imagine what it's going to be in 2020 with COVID. So I'm saying, what does it say about this richest nation in the world that our healthcare system is really a scandal? So I'm hoping that we might see some structural change in healthcare. I looked at the statistics for the National Alliance to End Homelessness, and in 2018, there were 553,000 homeless people on a single night, with rates steadily going up over the last several years. 67% of those are individuals and 33% are families with children. You know, and related to that, we've got 60 million children in the U.S. every day who do not have enough food to eat. So I think that COVID-19 has kind of stripped rose-colored glasses off those who might still be wearing them. And we're seeing that, you know, people who are considered marginalized in the U.S. are going to suffer even more than someone like me, an upper middle class white person who has a home mortgage free, paid off, where my children can come home safely. you know, and we can shelter at home. But what about those, you know, who have all lost their jobs, who are living paycheck to paycheck? Where are they going to go? So my long-term hope is that our political and economic structures will change to reflect what really serves the common good and not just for the upper middle class or the 1%. But, you know, every faith tradition, including my own, speaks to the moral obligation and the spiritual imperative to do that which protects the worth, the dignity, and I would say the essential rights of every person. So I think COVID-19 pandemic has stripped those glasses off most eyes, and we see the corruption and greed in our economic and healthcare systems. And perhaps this will be the moment when our nation rises up to say, this is not acceptable, that there is now hope for some deep structural changes that would benefit all people.
You know, if you study history deeply, you realize that, you know, to quote Patti Smith, people have the power, that popular power, civil society has been tremendously powerful and has changed the world again and again and again, that we're not powerless, that things are very unpredictable, and that people have often taken on things that seemed hopeless, freeing the slaves, getting women the vote, you know, and achieved those things. And I feel like so much of what we're burdened by is bad stories, both people who have amnesia, who don't remember that the present was constructed by certain forces to serve certain elements and can be deconstructed, and, you know, that things could be very different, that they have been very different, that things are always changing, and that we have agency in that change. And one of the simple examples I often go back to is that when you and I were small, to be gay or lesbian or otherwise something other than standard heterosexual was to be considered mentally ill or criminal or both, and punished accordingly. And to go from there to national same-sex marriage rights is an unimaginable journey. Yeah. You know, it's, and that's a lot of what my hopeful stuff is about, is trying to look at the immeasurable, incalculable, indirect, roundabout way that things matter.
That was Rebecca Solnit, and I'm Kathleen Shannon. Thanks for listening to these reflections on hope. Stay safe, stay grounded. This is Katie and Kay.